morning. Me just getting loaded. My name is Jennifer Ibrahim, and actually I'm going to split the presentation with our senior legal fellow, Evan Anderson. And I'm going to talk a little bit about this general movement that we're heading in of creating legal data sets, and then Evan's actually going to walk you through how we put together our data sets so that you can see the nuts and bolts of how this works, and then be able to apply it to the topic of your choice. So at the same time that Julia was looking to see what's out there in terms of data sets, we sort of started to get the sense that there's not a lot out there. And the problem is that what was there was, as Julia said, changing over time, inconsistent. And if I wanted to do a study on tobacco and Julia wanted to do a study on tobacco, we might each be creating a database, but again, looking at it from different perspectives. What we at the MPO wanted to do was to create this standardized approach to data so that if I'm doing a study on tobacco and I have a particular question, when I go through and collect those laws, and again, Evan will give you an example, I go through and essentially take all the meat off the bones, that I'm not just looking at my research question, I'm gathering this body of law, and I'm going through and I'm pulling out every single provision and being able to code it. So then, whether I'm doing the study or Julia's doing the study, that data is available and useful for multiple purposes. Part of the idea is that we recognize applying to NIH or another foundation and saying, I'm going to do this 50 states database, is costly, and I'm going to do it, and then you're going to do it, and you're going to do it. NIH doesn't want to pay for that. If there's a way that we can create the standardized methodology, that we can all share this data and bend the cost curve, it's much easier for that next step of evaluation to occur when that data is already there. And it also, as Scott was saying about our rapid response mechanism, if the data is already available, it makes evaluation of new and emerging laws much faster. So let me get into the presentation. Neither Evan or I have any relationships to disclose. So the two things that we're going to go through and I'm sorry?
Just like your graphic.
Oh, yeah, and it jumps out at you. Oh, it's supposed to jump out at you. The two things that we're going to go through and talk about, as I said, is we will discuss the current state of the law with regards to distracted driving, but we really were using the hot topic of distracted driving as a tool to figure out, to test this case of creating these standardized legal databases, and we'll talk more about that. And this is going to overlap a little bit with what Scott had talked about, but the idea particularly for this audience, and I have to say one of the fun things about our MPO is having the interaction between the legal experts and the public health experts. It's a lot of fun, the debates and discussions we have. How do you code this? What does this mean? What's the interpretation? So we really do have we're a fun group. But the thing to think about is what's happening a lot in public health research is that law is left to the discussion section in a very ambiguous way. We talk about it in terms of the implications for future research and the implications for practice, but law needs to be moved up into the methods section and into the analysis where it's a much more concrete, here's what we looked at, here's the way we measured it, and this is what it means. So we can't just think of it as law as text on the books, whether it be state statutes, regulations, judicial opinions. We need to start thinking of it as what it is, data. And how do we go through and quantify that? The other thing to think about is it's not just data. Thinking about those laws, there are serious implications for these other things that fall below the tip of the iceberg, if you will. What do these laws mean in terms of management and policy practices, attitudes towards use of the law, and then, of course, the folks who are subject to those laws. As Scott showed, really law can law can come into play in a couple of different ways. And as you're thinking about a study design, as you're thinking about how to measure it, it's important that you think of where that comes into play. Are you looking at law where you're talking about a state statute, in which case that would be that top left box? Are you looking at legal practices and the way a policy is actually being implemented? And Scott mentioned that in terms of looking at the way law enforcement is implementing laws. Those laws and legal practices can modify either the environment, such as a Clean Indoor Air law, where it's changing the way the environment is, or it could modify the behavior. And again, if you wanted to look at a clean indoor air law where you're changing a behavior from folks smoking inside a restaurant to going outside and smoking outside. And then hopefully that results in some form of improved health outcome. So turning to the case of distracted driving more specifically, what we have here is really a divergence between what we're seeing in the evidence and what we're seeing in terms of policy promulgation. So what we know from the existing epidemiological evidence is that it suggests that the use of mobile communication devices, and we broadened ours beyond just talking about cell phone distractions, mobile communication devices, and Evan will talk about the specific terms that we use, but mobile communications nowadays could be your cell phone, your iPad, your anything technological that you can hook up to the internet remotely and have some type of conversation. So it's the texting, the talking, the Bluetooth hands-free. All of these different things, the evidence, the current evidence suggests that it is associated with crashes. In addition, we also have this other problem where a lot of the studies are experimental simulations. It's much more difficult to go out and stand on the street corner and observe what's going on and get an accurate assessment of the behavior and then linking it with outcomes data. At the same time that we have this body of evidence, we also have states and cities that are passing laws, I won't say willy-nilly, but they're not following the evidence that we see. And what I mean is, what is it that we're legislating? Is it that we're legislating talking on the phone with it while you're driving? Are we legislating texting while you're driving? Is it that you can't use the phone at all, even if it's hands-free or Bluetooth? Or are we talking about special populations, such as young drivers, bus drivers, et cetera? And so now I'll turn it over to Evan, and he's going to walk through the process, talk a little bit about the technology that we used, and thinking about how to be able to link this with behavior and population health outcomes. Evan?
Sure. Good morning. So I'm going to talk for the next few minutes really about the method of quantifying law, measuring law, looking at law just like any other phenomena that's really important to health, and how you can and look at that phenomena and change it into a quantitative form that can be used in public health evaluations. So, you know, just to preface my remarks, this isn't a new methodology in any way. This is a sort of standard way you see in qualitative research, other types of research. We've just applied it to the law, right? And I want to loop back at the end and talk about some of the interesting things we've seen about how well it applies to legal research. So we could just start where lawyers generally start, and being a lawyer, this is where I generally start, with the law itself. So here's a law from Louisiana. It's a law that's banning young inexperienced drivers from using their mobile communication device while driving. Typical task for lawyers, right, the thing that they do traditionally, they'll gather the law and they'll figure out, you know, where is this found in the code. You know, here's a law from Louisiana, right? This part's pretty standard. You might be interested in a lawyer, you know, what does it cover? So this law covers texting, and who does it apply to? Well, this applies to inexperienced drivers, which we've defined as being young or being on a learner's permit. How is it enforced, right? You might be interested about enforcement. So this one's enforced through primary enforcement. And of course, there are other laws in Louisiana too, right? So a lot of times, you know, different provisions are scattered throughout the code. So there's also a law that bans texting for all drivers, and that's enforced primarily, and there's one that bans just talking for bus drivers, so it doesn't cover texting. So again, at this point, this is pretty standard legal work. This is what lawyers do. Now, it doesn't take too much to just assign numeric indicators, right? This is basic coding that you would see in any sort of qualitative work. You're just assigning numeric values to the different features, so you might say, you know, does it cover texting? Dichotomous variable, sure, yes, it does. You assign a zero, so forth. You can do this categorically. You can create ordinal variables. You can create continuous variables. You can basically variabilize the law just like you can on any other sort of legal text, any other text. And, of course, if you're doing any sort of public health evaluation, what's really important, right, is to have data over time, right, if you want to be able to make inferences about whether a change in the law is associated with a change in some outcome. It's really powerful if you have longitudinal data. So once again, you start with your law. This one has a little provision saying that when it was first enacted in 2007, it was enforced secondarily. The laws all have effective dates. So this one says, it's a little small, became effective in July 2008. So when we collect them, what we collect is we collect iterations of laws. We collect intervals of laws. So it began in July of 2008. It was amended in 2010. Oh, I'm going the wrong way. Sorry about that. In 2010, it became enforced primarily, right? So The law changed. Now police officers and other law enforcement could pull people over if they were seen texting, and it didn't have to be in the context of another offense. So the data changes. You get two iterations. You get two rows in your data set showing how that law changed over time. And of course, what you're interested in is you're interested in variation, right? As epidemiologists, you're interested in variation. So if you put the records together for Louisiana, you see how the law has changed over time in Louisiana. And of course, you want to see this over other states too, right? Because you're interested in variation, not only over time, but also over space. Just like health outcomes will vary over time and space. You can do this almost for an unlimited amount of variables. Enforcement, coverage, so on. What you end up with is a data sheet that just looks like any other data sheet that you would see in epidemiology. So, we've been learning over the last couple of years about how to streamline this process, and we've found that you can use all sorts of technology to make it faster, more efficient, more reliable. This is an example of an access database where we're gathering the text of the law. We're integrating our codebook into the actual program. So instead of having your codebook, your data sheet, your law, and going back and forth, they're integrated together. It makes things faster, more reliable. And all of these dump out in a data sheet, right? Data sheet that statisticians can use and they can run their analyses. This is showing just having imported the data into SPSS, but you can, of course, do that into SAS or any other analytical program. So at this point, we've moved from a body of text, and through going through the coding process, we've moved it all the way over to an analytical package. We can link up with health outcomes data, crash data, any other sort of data. And you can drop it into mapping programs. So this is just ArcGIS. The pull down there shows all the variables, and when we created our distracted driving data set, we had, I think, 35 variables, talking about the features and characteristics of those laws, and then going back 10 years to when the laws emerged. So one of the things that you can see, and this is just the example of laws that ban texting for all drivers, so you can get an idea of how the law has changed over time. You can see the evolution of policies. And I just have a couple printouts saying, you know, we're really talking about the method more than the example itself of distracted driving. But the sort of interesting things that you can do once you have the law quantified, you can look at it all sorts of different ways. You can understand the distribution of law, just like any other phenomena important to health. So these are the laws applying to inexperienced drivers. It's sort of amazing that you think 10 years ago that map would have been entirely white. Over the last 10 years, you've seen this rapid expansion of these laws. And laws applying to bus drivers, too. So you have lots of layers of law. Thanks. And again, the idea is just like in basic epidemiology, you're showing variation over space and over time. The same methods that apply in a lot of other areas can be applied to law. You can read a little bit more about our specific findings on this topic in our paper in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, and we talk a little bit more about the method. But the key really is the method for measuring law, and that's really what we want to emphasize today. And some of the hallmarks of that type of process are having the data set available, having a quantitative data set that shows how the laws vary, having a code book, right, which is something that you never find in legal research. The lawyers are socialized to do their research and to keep it confidential, right? And they're also usually responding to a question in real time. So a client will want to know something, and they'll scramble, and they'll look at the 50 states, and they'll just do it on the fly. And they're not thinking about doing things in a transparent way or being able to replicate it or being able to allow someone else to interrogate it. So we're really pushing this norm of you should create a code book a code book and a protocol that describe how you did the research, how did you code the variables. If there were instances of ambiguity in the coding and looking at features, how did you resolve them? Having a good record of all that stuff allows other people to come along. It allows economists to come along and use it to do quasi-experimental studies. Really important for science. We've also learned that it helps with the legal research. So you can actually, Julia talked about the difficulties of updating. And that's true to some extent, but it's also true that once you're using a scientific method to do legal research, you can actually do a lot of these updates a lot more efficiently. You do them more quickly. Rather than having to try to reinvent the wheel every 6 months, every year, you can actually just hand your law students a protocol. And you can say, you know, here are the basic parameters of the research, just update it again. And you can get that nice progression of the law over time. So we actually think that this is a actually really bends the cost curve in terms of doing research on policy and allowing researchers to basically do surveillance on policy just like you would on other sorts of public health data. And if you're interested in learning more, definitely this is the paper that Scott mentioned earlier, and this is a great diagram pulled from it that basically shows the process, and this paper goes through that very nicely. Basic idea is there are a bunch of iterative loops, just like you'd find in other disciplines, where you're trying to find that perfect way of coding the law and reducing all the important features of the law into a quantitative form. And as Scott mentioned, we'll have a chapter in our upcoming book about this as well. That's it. Thanks very much. Look forward to questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.